It is with great sadness that we would like to announce the death of Worst Foot Forward, aged 5½, who passed away cack-handedly, haphazardly, and with enormous bravado in an accident at the Mop Bucket Dynamite Roller Skate and Rake Factory during a fundraiser for the Wile E. Coyote Foundation. Their final words were, "Stand back, everyone, I'm just going to try something." Worst was a much-loved companion of many. Their rambling tales about an eclectic array of subjects, a clear sign of an inquiring mind riddled with undiagnosed ADHD. The adopted child of Barry and Ben, they bore the brunt of their dual Jewish-Irish heritage with a charming lightness, feeling at the same time enormously entitled to everything, whilst also a chirpy underdog. At home in every pub in the world, whilst also nervous of being kicked out of the country at any time. A lover of good crack, and also cheap schmabber. Worst could sometimes also be the best, but only when Ben and Barry struggled to find a guest or had briefly run out of inspiration. Mostly, though, Worst was a reliable fellow, always capable of raising the spirits of any who would listen to their tall, incredibly well-researched and worthy of major investment episodes. They are survived by 2 doting parents, about 1,200 regular listeners who would do well to respect their memory by clicking like and subscribe, telling all their friends about the show and increasing their number, and an almost identical son who will continue their work. And now, for the committal, please welcome the very irreverend Barry McStay.
I imagine we're going to go full Viking burial with this podcast when you eventually get rid of it. We're going to take the microphone that we're recording in right now, put it on a pedalo and launch it out to sea with some firelighters.
Yes. What, the pedalos that Vikings famously...
Yeah, Viking pedalos. We'll put some horns on the front of it.
Well, on their 18 to 21 holiday. Yeah. No Vikings ever lived up to the age of 30.
Yeah. What's a traditional Jewish funeral?
Get them in the ground within 24 hours.
Yeah, a quick one.
Yeah, it's like a Challenge Annika thing.
And we're sort of like, Ireland tends to be, you know, 3, 4, 5 days maybe. Oh, I cannot understand over here when, you know, someone dies and you go, "I've got to go home for the funeral in 2½ weeks.
Yeah.
Like, bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, the weird delay.
I think it's just that they want to go, "Do you know what, we have a very good refrigeration infrastructure."
Yeah.
I think it maybe is that, isn't it? It's that, you know, hot countries... Get them in the ground, oh my God!
Yeah.
And then, it's cold, we can relax, lean over them, have a few drinks. It's all good.
And maybe it's the, we've got to have enough time to write a really good scathing obituary.
As
we're going to find out in this episode, there's a lot of euphemisms and things you can do with obituaries to pay tribute or do the opposite of pay tribute to people.
Yeah, yes. And a lot of not even bothering with euphemisms.
Yes. before we launch into that, let me introduce our guest. Our guest this week, who you've already heard, is an actor and comedy writer who studied history at university, like Ben and I, before going on to work in the performing arts, like Ben and I, and who is an integral part of one of the most outstanding and beloved comedy programmes on the air in the UK today. Yes, she has been a cast member of the brilliant and award-winning John Finnemore Souvenir Programme on BBC Radio 4 since it first aired in 2011. Her Radio 4 career has also seen her writing for the likes of The Now Show and That Mitchell and Webb Sound, as well as a stint as a regular panellist on The News Quiz between 2006 and 2009, back when the news was boring. Her writing for TV includes Newsoids and The Tracy Ullman Show, and she's currently developing both a sitcom and a children's animated series. Her stage work has seen her perform in the Bush Theatre and the Menier Chocolate Factory, and she has proclaimed that she is most likely to have a career akin to that of Dame Maureen Lipman. So, while Maureen Lipman prepares to take a one-woman show, Rose, to the West End, we welcome our guest to Ben's sitting room. You already won up on her, though. She's not done this podcast, so please welcome the obviously much better than Maureen Lipman, it's Carrie Quinlan.
She sounds great.
Yeah.
Wow.
I like the sound of it.
I want to be there. I'd forgotten about the Maureen Lipman thing because I years after I wrote that, I met Maureen Lipman. I was in a play by Jack Rosenthal and I was playing a dancer and a waitress. Mm-hmm. I'd been cast for the waitress role, very much not the dancer. And had to do 30 seconds of dance at the beginning of the scene. On press night, Maureen Lipman came up to me and said, so this is a hero of mine, first thing she says to me is, "Was the dancing supposed to be terrible or is that the best you can do?"
Oh, was that meant to be sort of like charming brusqueness?
No, she's a hard ass.
Did she stand up in front of you and say, "Carrie, don't do that"? You're welcome, the 7 people who get the Joyce Grenfell reference.
Yeah. I would, she, because, like... Maureen Lipman holds such a strange place in my firmament because there was one of my mum's friends in the amateur dramatic group did the Joyce Grenfell thing in like a review that they put on. And I was like, oh my God, Marta's amazing. And then a few years later, I was like, oh, Marta's ripping off Grenfell. And so my mum, like, she worshipped two comic gods. One was Maureen Lipman, the false god, and the other was Victoria Wood. There you go.
The one true queen, precisely.
But just, yeah, with each future viewing of Maureen Lipman.
We've got Carrie Quinn in here.
We don't need Maureen Lipman. We absolutely don't.
She is brutal.
Well, I can't. I'd love to have Maureen Lipman do a eulogy. I bet.
No, she'd do an ology.
An ology.
Hey! Oh, I mean, there's no... We should turn the microphone
shut
down.
Shut it down.
Nothing's beating that.
Well, you say that. There's a good 500 American listeners who have no idea what just happened.
Yes, you're very good at clinging to the coattails of one of the most beloved actresses of the British stage today. What are you not so good at, Carrie? We always ask your guests what they're worst at.
I had real trouble with this, and not because of, you know, because I'm amazing at things. I think it's that low self-esteem thing means that you start a list and it's a really long list of things that I'm worst at. Mm. It was a really long list. And then the next bit of low self-esteem kicks in that goes, no, there's got to be someone who's better at being shit at those things. surely.
I can't be the shittest at this.
I mean, that would make me exceptional. And that simply can't be the case.
So you're the worst at having imposter syndrome.
Or the best. I can't be. Oh, God.
You've caught it in a paradox.
This is a nightmare. Yeah.
You're like the living embodiment of that sort of putative experiment where you drop a cat, but you've buttered its back.
Yes.
So you're just now hovering above the ground, spinning.
Yeah.
Wow. I think we've never broken anybody with that question quite as much.
I've ended up hating myself.
Oh.
So thanks.
Mission achieved.
Thanks very much.
Cool.
But I'm probably not the best at that.
Oh. No. I mean,
someone called Maureen Lipman.
Yeah. Right, well, friends, this week we're going to talk about the world's worst obituary, which you chose, Carrie. Why did you go for obituary?
You provided me with a list of things that you were thinking about doing. An obituary's leapt out as being, I bet they're able to be dreadful in lots of different ways. And, yeah, dead people are funny and they can't sue.
Yeah, that's very true.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
you would hope. Barry, you're going to go first.
So I first of all looked at fictional people who have had obituaries published in the newspapers.
Great.
And do you know who the first fictional person, and I think so far only fictional person to have a New York Times obituary is?
Ooh.
Superman?
No, good guess. I have a Superman one for you in a second.
Is it Maud Flanders?
No, it is Hercule Poirot.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was
He's
ill.
He's dead?
Yeah.
Yay!
We do have some Christie fans among our listenership, so they'll know the plot of Agatha Christie's final case, which is called Curtain. And she wrote it in the 1940s to be published basically kind of posthumously or at the end of her career.
Kind of like Black Star by David Bowie.
Yes, a bit like that, yeah, knowing it, the end
where
was coming.
Where it came out and everyone went, what does this mean? And then the next day went,
that's what it meant. I'd love it if this final Poirot story was him going to the Rickenback Falls just to check that Moriarty is dead and accidentally slips and falls in. And all that's left is just a moustache floating down the river.
Well, the moustache gets mentioned in the obituary. I've got a bit from it here. Hercule Poirot, a Belgian detective who became internationally famous, has died in England. His age was unknown. Mr. Poirot achieved fame as a private investigator after he retired as a member of the Belgian police force in 1904. At the end of his life, he was arthritic and had a bad heart. He was in a wheelchair often and was carried from his bedroom to the public lounge at Stiles Court, a nursing home in Essex, wearing a wig and false moustaches to mask the signs of age that offended his vanity. In his active days, he was always impeccably dressed.
For some reason, it must be his manner, I always thought of him as a Dr. Poirot rather than a Mr. Poirot, or Monsieur Poirot.
Monsieur, you know, he's a... I think in the most recent Kenneth Branagh adaptation, they show him serving in the war as well.
Captain
Poirot.
Maybe he was an honorary doctorate.
Sure, he must.
Surely,
must have got an honorary doctorate.
Yeah.
University of Stafford or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Poirot's last case was published in October 1975 in the US, but the New York Times actually ran the obituary a couple of months earlier in August. So,
spoilers.
Did he get to read his own obituary?
Yeah. No, he was made up.
Yeah, yes, no, that's true. If anybody could read their own obituary, it would
be Poirot. Yeah, his little grey cells.
Little grey cells.
Well, and also, did... Surely his obituary started with, I imagine you're wondering why I gathered you here.
Yes, oh my gosh, it so should have. In 2015, the Albuquerque Journal published an obituary to one of Albuquerque's most famous fictional residents, Walter White.
Oh!
White, Walter, a.k.a. Heisenberg, 52, of Albuquerque, died Sunday after a long battle with lung cancer and a gunshot wound.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah, a reference to Breaking Bad, of course. And Time Magazine in 1995 had a whole page of fictional engagement and birth notices and some death notices. It had a notice for the death of Farley, who's the dog in a Canadian comic strip called For Better or For Worse.
Wow.
Died Professor Charles Xavier, 32, founder of the X-Men. There had recently been a series in the X-Men comics
32?
About the death of... Yeah.
He did not wear well, did he?
Yeah, it was some sort of time-travelling voyeur. He'd been killed 20 years in the past, I think, in the plot of this comic book, and then an alternate reality was created where the X-Men didn't exist.
Yeah, it was James McAvoy dead rather than Patrick Stewart.
James McAvoy dead, yeah. I mean, he has died so many times. There are lots of lists of the amount of times Charles Xavier has died, by the way, both on screen and in the comic books.
There should be a Lebowski Times with just obituaries for Steve Buscemi over and over again.
Clark Kent is in this as well. Clark Kent, 56, but it's died with inverted commas around it because, again, there was
because he was doing stand-up.
Yeah. There was an arc in the Superman comics at the time about Clark Kent faking his death, basically. So this tapped into that.
This is a nerdy edition of Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Mid-1995.
This is great.
Man of the Year isn't interesting again at this point. It's just like, well, we just do comics.
Gandalf fell into a pit. Yeah. and
the famous, there's the famous story about Alfred Nobel reading his own obituary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not entirely sure if this is true or not. People have sort of struggled to find the alleged obituary. The story goes that Nobel's brother died, his brother Ludwig, and mistakenly a French newspaper published an article about his death, attributing the death to Nobel and saying, calling him the angel of death and various things, and Nobel was horrified by the thought, and so then adjusted his will so that when he died it would create a prize for various different human endeavours, including the Peace Prize. But Nobel already had pacifist hopes. He thought, actually, that because Nobel invented dynamite, he actually had the ambition that, he says here, my dynamite will sooner lead to peace than 1,000 world conventions. As soon as men will find that in one instant whole armies can be utterly destroyed, they surely will abide by golden peace. So he thought by inventing dynamite, people would go, this weapon is so dangerous, we can never have wars again.
How's that going, Alf?
Interestingly, the Wright brothers also thought that the invention of airplanes, certainly whichever Wright survived to World War I, I can't remember which one of his
was. It was either Orville or Keith.
Yes. Keith Wright. They saw air combat in World War I and they thought, God, well, this can never happen. You know, the airplane, surely... people will see the danger that it would pose and they'll never have wars on this scale again, and obviously hasn't quite been the experience of humankind.
I don't want to jinx it, but you seem to have reached that ceiling now with nuclear
weapons.
Do you think? Yeah, so far.
But they've only been around for 70 years, you know, give them time. They're just waiting for the right time.
Sure. You'd have thought by now, even if by accident, nuclear weapons would have done for us.
Yeah. If they were going to do it, they'd have done it by now. You can all relax at home, listeners.
Everything's fine. There's no 4-minute warning anymore. Yeah. It's all good. My dad was one of the architects of mutually assured destruction.
Yes.
Excuse me?
Which is, yeah, quite... he was a British civil servant in the Ministry of Defence and a sort of semi-philosopher of the nuclear age and tried to make sure that nuclear weapons were never used. Because you can't put the genie back in the bottle, so how do we make sure it's never used?
You can't wish for infinite wishes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I read a bit about euphemisms and sort of classic obituaries and things like that. And there was a big trend, particularly in the UK, starting in the mid-80s, that you had a chap called Hugh Massingbird was the obituaries editor of The Telegraph. And the Independent had launched over here as well, the Independent newspaper. And James Ferguson was the obituaries editor there. And they sort of took their pen with arid humour and understatement and irony and euphemisms to try and write, you know, interesting and funny obituaries, which then became, you know, a must-read part of those papers. And so they had phrases that they would use. For example, his door was always open meant someone was a lush.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or this, his door was always open at any time of the day or night, lush with an eye for students. And tireless raconteur meant they were a bore. Vivacious meant they were a drunk. He tended to become over-attached to certain ideas and theories. Fascist.
This is tremendous. Yeah.
Gave colourful accounts of his exploits. Liar. She did not suffer fools gladly. Foul-tempered shrew. Fun-loving bachelor with many male acquaintances. Serial cottager. Yeah. Yeah, Charles Moore, he also lists some of the euphemisms they used at the Times. He had an uncompromisingly direct way with the opposite sex, a flasher. She believed in hands-on mentoring affairs with junior colleagues. He believed in old world values, wanted to bring back the birch, especially for members of the LGBT community. And she was active in local affairs, busybody. and they, you know, they even used their wit to, when they'd prematurely buried some people. Dave Swarbrick of Fairport Convention, they accidentally published an obituary for him in the Telegraph. And the next day they had the apology. Mr. Swarbrick, who was reported dead in yesterday's Daily Telegraph, is recovering well. He never married is the famous phrase that would sort of clangingly appear at the end of an obituary for somebody as sort of deliberately meant to say, oh, by the way, they were gay.
I don't think we ever had she never married. Wasn't it more like she lived quietly in the countryside with a friend, or her sister or something like that? It was a different phrase for girls than for boys.
And it would be used, you know, non-codedly as well. There would be some people who were confirmed bachelors and so on.
You're either a confirmed or an unconfirmed.
But my favourite one of these sort of classic obituaries that I came across was for the Third Lord Moynihan, which was written in November 1991 by Massingbird's deputy, a chap called David Evans. It begins, "The Third Lord Moynihan, who has died in Manila aged 55, provided, through his character and career, ample ammunition for critics of the hereditary principle."
Yes! I'm going to say, dying in Manila earlier than your batting average suggests some sort of naughtiness occurring.
It continues, "His chief occupations were bongo drummer, confidence trickster, brothel keeper, drug smuggler, and police informer." And it goes on. This article I'm reading goes, absurdly it gets better as it goes on. "If there was a guiding principle to Moynihan's life, it was to be found on the wall of his office in Manila, where a brass plaque bore the legend, of the 36 ways of avoiding disaster, running away is the best."
That reminds you, there's a comedy promoter called Jonathan Atherton, who died a couple of years ago, and I never worked for him, but he did gigs out in that part of the world, in Malaysia and the Philippines and Singapore. And I was reading Matt Kirshen and a couple of other comedians are talking about, they were in after a gig in like a late night eatery, and a guy runs in covered in blood, brandishing a machete. Everyone scarpers, and Atherton is just sat there still eating, calm as you like. And you're like, what are you doing? He goes, well, he's not here for me. And just
I did read a bit about Lord Moynihan because he sounds interesting.
Yeah.
He succeeded to the peerage in 1965. His main thrust of interest while in the House of Lords was giving Gibraltar back to Spain. In 1968, he was interrupted giving a speech by Lord Boothby, who said, "My lords, the noble lord has bored us stiff for nearly three quarters of an hour. I beg to move, he no longer be heard." In the 1970s, he found employment in the narcotics trade, is how this article describes it.
Confirmed or unconfirmed?
Confirmed, yes. In 1980, he was named by an Australian Royal Commission as an associate of a drug mob in Sydney. He worked as a pimp in the Philippines. He was good friends with President Marcos, who he called my drinking chum. He married an actress and a model called Anne Herbert, and then left her for a Malaysian dancer who danced under the name Princess Amina, reconciled with his first wife, then married the Malaysian dancer after converting to Islam. One of his Malaysian marriages was bigamous, so he also ran nightclubs in Ibiza. He challenged Al Ricketts, an American journalist, to a duel after Al Ricketts criticised his wife's dancing. The duel consisted of them attacking each other with their buttocks.
Oh, sorry, how do you do a...
No idea.
A buttock duel.
Bum duel.
Bum duel.
That's an early draft of Hamilton, isn't it? Yeah. 10 rules for dueling with your butt.
Is it
running backwards together?
I feel at like,
speed,
I feel,
or
I,
is it fire, or is it, does it involve firing?
Does an aide come out with like a mahogany box filled with bums? Gentlemen, choose your bum.
Well, and then you have to, because it's like an old style flintlock blunderbuss, you have to get like the fluffer to prepare it. In my mind, I saw it as kind of like bum sumo wrestling, where you drop your kegs around your knees and you go bum to bum.
Yeah.
Or do you insert a bullet into your arse, and which of you farts the most powerfully?
I think that might be it.
Yes.
You wouldn't want to be explaining that to St. Peter. What are you doing here? Well, I have a story for you?
But with Lord Moynihan, it's what he would have wanted.
Yes, it is exactly what he would have wanted. When he was found out for all of his drug dealing, he eventually turned as an informant for the United States Drug Enforcement Administration. Howard Marks, the famed Welsh drug smuggler, described him as a first-class bastard. What greater tribute could he wish for? But I've gone for my world's worst obituary as that of Secretariat, the American racehorse.
Wow.
Okay, great.
Secretariat died on October the 4th, 1989. Secretariat was also known as Big Red. Champion American thoroughbred racehorse, was the winner of the Triple Crown, which means that he won the three biggest races in America all in the 1 year. The Kentucky Derby, the Belmont Stakes, and the Preakness. And the Belmont, he won by 31 lengths, which is like, you hear of horses winning by a nose or half a length. 31 lengths, it's one of the greatest races ever. And I think he still holds the time record for all three of those races, and that was 35 years ago.
He's the Usain Bolt of the horse racing world.
When he died, there is a tradition when horses die that you bury their heart and their head and their hooves rather than the entire corpse, because, you know, horses are big.
No, I understand that, but that sounds like what you do to a vampire to make sure it doesn't come back to life again.
Or a medieval saint.
What are you doing? Oh, I'm just beheading this racehorse, taking its heart out, puncturing it with a stake.
God, poor horses, because when they're ill, you get a shotgun.
Yes,
well, and when they're dead, you get a saw.
Yeah, he was euthanized. He had a painful, debilitating hoof condition, so he had a month of them trying to revive him, and it just wasn't working. So he was euthanized, he was buried. He was buried whole on the farm.
I'm glad he was buried whole. No, I know what it was—the whole head, heart, hooves thing. It's because everyone else was looking at that, going, "God, it's a waste of good dog food."
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, he the surgeon.
I need to stick this up on the wall.
Has anyone done a sketch of a horse racing commentator where all the horses are named after dog food brands? Maybe a couple of glue brands in as well.
Yeah. Well, when he was being examined post-mortem, the veterinary surgeon who looked at him said his heart was like absurdly large. That was what made him such a phenomenal racehorse. Really,
so there was no point in cutting it out. It wasn't going to make the grave.
Yes, the grave. He actually had, his body was a TARDIS.
He was a heart with a mouth.
Yeah. As I say, he was buried on this farm, and the day he died, or the day after he died, the New York Times had on his front page, "The flags in the infield of Belmont Park were flying at full staff yesterday because tradition says not to lower them for the death of a horse. One fan who spoke for many disagreed." He wasn't a horse, Bennett Liebman said sadly.
He was.
Bennett Liebman says he was Secretariat. Brackets a horse. But, fine. You know, it's a beloved sporting figurehead. Mm-hmm. Understandable.
Literally after its death.
Yes. Understandable would make the front page of the New York Times. But the front page of the New York Times did not carry a notice that same day for the death of Graham Chapman.
Ooh.
Who had also died on October the 4th.
Who John Cleese beheaded to took out his heart.
It was his foot that was... everything was modelled on.
Yeah. And so for the reason that he kept the death of probably the best python off the front page of the New York Times for a horse. And I come from a horsey family. But still, I'm going to pick Secretariat as the world's worst obituary.
I think that's big talk. I think Chapman being the best Python.
It's very much a movable feast
it is,
a lot of the
it?
Time, yeah.
And there you go. You've got to do a world's worst Python, haven't you?
I think Chapman did the right thing, tucking and rolling out of planet Earth early before his legacy could be tarnished.
Yeah.
That is true, because, you know, now from the perspective of 2023, the best Python is...
Michael Palin.
Yes. Thank you. Good, right.
Absolutely.
The one good Python.
One good Python that lives in the same moral universe as Victoria Wood.
Yeah.
Fuck off with Lippmann.
Who'd have thought Eric Idle would turn out to be not the worst Python?
When and how was he problematic?
I think he was always the businessy one, which was slightly frowned upon. So he was all the amateur.
Yes, yeah.
Right. Whereas Cleese
I'm slapping fish for art.
Yeah. So, Carrie, what have you brought?
I also brought in a bit of Dave Swarbrick's obituary. There was 20 years before he actually died. Oh, he was in hospital in Coventry. He replied to the obituary obviously everyone knows the Mark Twain reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated, but Dave Swarbrick came back with, "It's not the first time I've died in Coventry."
Hey!
So I very much enjoyed that. But the one I've brought in, I did tons of research for this, loads of research for this, and have gone back to the first obituary I found, which is someone not famous, because families, there's a big thing of families writing obituaries for their loved ones or somewhat less...
Yes.
Loved ones.
Do you know what? I don't know what the rest of your family do, but do you find that as an artist or creative, the expectation then falls to you? You know, when someone dies, the thing is, of course you'll write something or you'll say something.
I
am not the oldest brother of my three brothers, but I know that when my parents die, the expectation is that I will be the one who have to do the obituaries.
Yeah, I'd be like, right, you write it, I'll gag it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I work to commission, normally.
Oh, see, in my family, I'm very much the, you are under no circumstances writing about any of us.
You'll do the Hugh Massingbird versions of them.
Yeah,
like, no,
yeah,
thank you.
Exactly.
No,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had that when my son graduated from nursery, which is not a sentence I'm happy saying.
Sorry, graduate.
Wow.
There was a graduation ceremony. There was
summa cum laude?
Yes, precisely.
Yeah.
Very loudly.
Very loudly. Unbelievable. They were there and
in their little tiny baby mortarboards.
100%.
No.
Yeah.
No, they didn't do that.
I was so angry about the Americanization of it, but they did look adorable. But the
sorry, it's almost like done a line of Cabbage Patch Kids, but they're like... students, but it's basically your kid's nursery.
Yeah. Did they make their own mortarboards?
They decorate them how they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just glitter everywhere.
Unicorn horns on them.
Oh, it would have been amazing. No, they looked like tiny Death Eaters. It was awful. But the principal...
that sounds way better.
Okay, but it does sound way better. But everyone was like in their Sunday best out in the garden, all looking like, oh, look at our adorable children, aren't they all special? And then,
when did you do it? Royal Festival Hall?
£60 a ticket, Prosecco reception.
Absolute nonsense.
Absolute nonsense. But I was just there, sort of sat there going, I can't believe this is nonsense, I'll be on my best behaviour. And the head of the nursery was like, oh, well, Ben, as the comedian, would you like to say a few words on behalf of the parents? And I was like, no! Because you're all expecting me to be funny now, and I'm going to be sincere, and then you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Was your boy valedictorian?
that means the best one.
Yeah.
He was the best one.
He was voted most likely to.
Did the speech.
He actually did.
Oh!
So they pre-prepared a little interview between the teacher and the kids to just go, like, my name is this, I like this, I'm going to go here, this is what I've done, this is why I think my mummy and daddy are going to be on my first day at school. And all the other kids looked terrified. And they were like, Fraser, come here, you're up. And they clearly thought, you're the son of a stand-up, you can do it. And there was a proper X Factor 10-second pause where we could see his brain going... Am I going to fuck this up or am I going to do it? And then he smashed that out of the park.
At least it's good to know which of your kids is doing your obituary, isn't it?
Yeah, the problem is I also know which kid is going to do my murder. That is my daughter.
Yeah.
There's a risk, isn't there, of being a stand-up and having kids. I remember Marcus Brigstock's son, when he was quite small, got told off in class because he kept standing on the table, getting his willy out and strumming it. And the teacher made the terrible mistake of saying, would your daddy do that at work? And it really confused him. He just didn't know what to say. Because he might.
I know this isn't the main question, but I want to know what note he got out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Presumably it was a D. Don't know if any of this is staying in, who knows?
No. Banjo D.
Banjo D.
Yeah, banjo.
Where were we 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah. So I've brought in the obituary of Dolores Aguilar, who was famous in no way except to her family. And there are two things I like about this, because there are different categories of terrible obituaries. There are, obviously, the I'm not dead ones. There are the, this was a terrible person, and we're gonna say so. Mm. There are the this was a wonderful person, and we're gonna make the obituary so utterly cloying that you're gonna hate them.
There was one
I read that opened so and so got her angel wings. And I was just like, no, I can't go further than that. It's, oh,
and the converse was, did you read the one from Marianne Theresa Johnson Reddick?
I don't think so.
She was in the Reno Gazette, in the Reno Gazette Journal in 2013. Her family hated her. And so they did a quote. She is survived by her 6 of 8 children, whom she spent her lifetime torturing in every way possible. While she's neglected and abused her small children, she refused to allow anyone else to care or show compassion towards them. She sounds like a terrible person.
Yeah.
And they absolutely took the opportunity to say
so. Yeah, I love those ones.
As did the Aguilars. What I love about this obituary is, apart from the fact that it's a massive kicking, and that's always entertaining, it starts as if it's Genesis, and not. if only. The biblical Genesis.
Yeah.
Tragically, that would have been
good.
I didn't
know EastEnders was in Genesis.
it's a long and boring beginning, but it is worth it. And I'm going to read the whole thing.
Great.
Dolores Aguilar, born in 1929 in New Mexico, left us. Just say died. Okay, but yeah, just say died.
None of
this
died
passed on shit or got her angel wit. She's dead.
Yeah.
Left us on August the 7th, 2008. She will be met in the afterlife. Strap in, everyone. By her husband, Raymond, her son, Paul Jr., and daughter, Ruby.
In what setting?
I mean,
we'll tell you what, when you get there, we'll meet you in, there's a cafe called St. Thomas's. It's a couple down on the left.
I'm stuck on a bus.
No, don't doubt it is there, I promise
you. I might be a bit late.
Yes.
She is survived by her daughters, Marietta, Mitzi, Stella, Beatrice, Virginia, and Ramona.
Wow, there's a real mix of names
Yeah. And then become great characters in the American playwriting songbook.
Yes, yeah.
And her son, Billy.
Oh, poor Billy.
They just ran out of...
Billy and Mitzi.
Also survived by her grandchildren, Donnell, Joe, Mitzi, Maria, Mario, Marty. They're just picking it out of a book of names. Tynette, Tanya, Letta, Alexandria, Tommy, Billy, Matthew Raymond... Interesting.
Hyphenated?
Yeah. Sadly, no. Just left out a comma.
But just indecisive.
Matthew Raymond. Kenny, Javier, Lisa, Ashley, and Michael. Her great-grandchildren.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do you know what? This reads like one of the opening books of Genesis, where there's just pages and pages
exactly
of begatting.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly that. Brendan, Joseph, Carissa, Jacob, Delaney, Sean, Sienna, with a C. Bailey, Christian, Andre Jr., Andrea, they're making this up. Keith, Saeed.
Sorry, Keith and then Saeed.
Yeah, Keith and Saeed.
Yeah.
Nuyama, Salma, Marissa, Emily, JC, Isabella, Samantha, and Emily. And here's the kicker. I apologise if I missed anyone. I don't think they missed... I mean... Anyone.
I'd have apologised in case I'd over-included people.
yeah.
Length of that list.
I mean, I feel like I was in that list. Yeah. I don't think I've missed anyone at all.
I'm so sorry for the loss of Dolores, Gary.
Dolores had no hobbies.
She didn't have any time.
I mean, exactly. Yeah, she was busy. Made no contribution to society. I beg to differ. She's got 400 great jobs.
She made society.
Yeah, she created an entire society. And rarely shared a kind word or deed in her life. Ooh. I speak for the majority of her family when I say her presence will not be missed by many. Very few tears will be shed, and there will be no lamenting over her passing.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the majority, though. Someone probably liked her.
There's a real little shady sting in there of naming children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and then saying very few tears will be shed when the list is that bloody long.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Here are all the tear ducts that she made.
None of them will be working today.
They are dry. Her family will remember Dolores, and amongst ourselves, we will remember her in our own way. Oof! Which were mostly sad and troubling times throughout the years. We may have some fond memories of her, and perhaps we will think of those times too. Ouch!
Perhaps we might.
I mean, they're probably deep somewhere.
There's lots of no trouble if not vibes. Yeah.
I think she once cooked one of us an egg.
Yeah.
That's going to be on a headstone somewhere in a graveyard in 50 years' time.
No trouble if not.
Here lies Barry McStay. No trouble if not.
Oh, my favourite, the best gravestone is Jack Lemmon. Just says Jack Lemmon in.
Yes.
Amazing.
But I truly believe, at the end of the day, all in capitals of us will really only miss what we never had. A good and kind mother, grandmother and great-grandmother.
Wow.
In it. I hope she's finally at peace with herself. As for the rest of us left behind, I hope this is the beginning of a time of healing and learning to be a family again. There will be no service, you think?
But there will be a party.
No closure for the family she spent a lifetime tearing apart.
Fuck me.
Isn't it? We cannot come together in the end to see to it that her grandchildren and great-grandchildren can say their goodbyes. So I say here for all of us, bye, Mum.
That's it. What an ending.
Isn't it?
Children out.
Yeah. Wow. Mic drop into the grave. Boom. Yeah. Done.
I mean, they're dead. They don't have right of reply.
You kind of want more detail, though, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, she seems like an absent mother and is absent within her own obituary.
Yeah.
Where is it published again?
So it's in the Vallejo Times Herald.
I've just read a little addendum to this. So there's an article following this up, and the person who's writing this article said. There's some really interesting details. The Vallejo Times Herald editor said we even requested a copy of the death certificate, something we rarely do to make sure it wasn't a scam.
Wow.
And then one of the children speaks to the author of this article saying, I wanted to do the right thing, the honest thing. When she died, a co-worker gave me a copy of an obituary she wrote for her father as a kind of writing guide. What struck me was how my mother was none of the things I was reading.
It is like when you go, I dislike both at weddings and at funerals now because we don't really live in a world where vicars and priests and rabbis give pastoral care like they used to in the old days, where they just have to read off cue cards what this person was like and pretend that they knew them.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe it was just written by her least favourite daughter? And actually she was brilliant. Everyone loved her. Yes.
And this is the one who was disinherited aged 4.
Yeah. Or just got grounded for no obvious reason.
Yeah, or well, this was written from her underground
just
cell.
Burning.
Yeah.
With fury. Because she didn't get a kitten.
Or maybe they were just like, you know what, the funeral would be really expensive. There's loads of us. All her friends. Yeah. Why don't we just tell everyone she was a shit and then not having a funeral and we save the cash.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's a good grift.
I might
use that.
Yeah.
I love as well, you say that all was capitalised. I like that the end is goodbye, Mum.
I said goodbye.
Yeah. You can almost hear them
out.
Hitting the nails into the coffin as they say it.
Riddance went over the word count, so it just had to be. had to be by.
You mentioned earlier, Barry, Alfred Noble seeing his own obituary and being quite upset by it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see you and raise you Marcus Garvey. So, Marcus Garvey was a Jamaican political activist and publisher and entrepreneur and journalist and orator and one of the most important sort of black thinkers and political forces of the 20th century. He suffered a stroke in January 1940, at which point some newspapers published premature obituaries of his. Apparently, he read one of these, which led to a second stroke, from which he then died.
Oh!
Yeah.
Was it the fact of the obituary or the content?
Did he read it and go, oh shit, I'm late?
Yeah.
No, I'm meant to be.
I'm meant to be. I don't know, but that's almost a Python sketch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Someone reading their own obituary and dying.
He didn't even have time to set up a peace prize.
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
The least he could have done.
I mean...
A slightly happier version of that is the retired BBC sports commentator who had his obituary file updated in 1985 and accidentally published at the same time. He was 84 and actually died 9 years later when he was 93. But the really fun part of it was that when he was 85... he remarried.
Yeah.
So he's the only person to have his marriage announced and published in the Times after his obituary.
Oh.
That's good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Another person who got to read their own obituary at their own request was P.T. Barnum. Barnum, by all accounts, was one of the worst men who ever lived. You should listen to Greg Jenner's You're Dead to Me podcast, where he was a great showman, but also one of the most exploitative shits of the 19th century. And
that's a strong field.
Right, yeah. Right.
But Ben, his singing voice.
This
is the greatest obit.
Yeah. The headline in the New York Sun newspaper read, "Great and only Barnum. He wanted to read his obituary, so here it is."
They called him out on it.
Yeah.
So did he write in going, "Oh, I want to read my obituary," and then they just published and said, "Listen how vain this guy is."
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
There's that lovely joke in Drop the Dead Donkey where Joy says to them, I'm just going to go and update Thatcher's obituary. I said, we didn't know she'd done anything recently. No, she hasn't. I've just had a really bad day and need cheering up.
Well, talking of Margaret Thatcher, when she...
Don't say her name three times, please. Summon her.
When she took the elevator to the bottom floor, there was a Twitter hashtag that appeared, which was hashtag Now Thatcher's Dead. The problem is with that was that a lot of people thought that meant that Cher had died. Because it could also be read as hashtag now that Cher's dead.
That is up there with Susan album party, the Susan Boyle hashtag.
Yes, yes.
Susan album party.
And the PowerGen Italy site that's PowerGen
Italy. Italy. Yes. Tremendous. There's a really charming one I read for a woman called Selma Koch, who died at age 95.
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, we're in the last joke again, aren't we? K-O-C-H.
Full stiff.
Yeah. This is what a description of her. She was owned a store in Manhattan selling underwear to women, but described here as a famed brassiere maven. Which is, what a term.
What's that in the dictionary of obituary terminology?
Well, I think it's different for a man and for a woman.
Yeah.
Well, she had a national reputation that she could find the right bra size just by looking and never used a tape measure.
Yes, that's right.
She died this Thursday at Mount Sinai Medical Center. Ms. Koch was 95 and a 34B, which really charming, really charming stuff.
There's an obituary here for a guy called Douglas Legler, American, but I'm not entirely sure where it's from, but it's just a picture of him and says, Doug died.
Oh. Dud's dead. Yeah. Did you hear Dud died? Yeah. Duddy? Duddy? Duddy did.
Yeah. Someone died on first base as well.
Yeah.
Someone dig for Doug.
Yeah. So Bob Hope has been declared dead, well, three times, because twice it was incorrect. But the first time
we
was...
We live in hope.
Yellow card.
It was accidentally appeared on the Associated Press website, and then it was announced in the House of Representatives and had to be retracted. But my favourite...
Is that a case of someone lying on the floor of the House, then?
Yeah.
They don't take it that seriously in America.
But the better one, there was something I'm going to tell you about again in a minute, of the 2003 CNN.com incident. But as part of it, his draft obituary was uploaded. But for some reason, Bob Hope's draft obituary was based on a template of the Queen Mother's obituary. So Bob Hope was referred to in his own obituary as the Queen Consort and the UK's favourite grandmother.
There's got to be someone who's got an obituary that starts lorem ipsum.
Yeah. Elizabeth Bowles Lyon did a lot of like entertaining the troops.
Absolutely.
With like a golf club.
Yeah. But given the number of times he did a comeback special, it's sort of right that he had several obituaries, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of feels.
Retirement, obituary, retirement, obituary, retirement, obituary.
This is it. So it's not just Bob Hope's obituary that was published that identified him as the United Kingdom's favourite grandmother. Other favourite grandmothers of the United Kingdom...
was this one obituary? Like, they all use the template of the Queen Mother's. Like, when you're sending out emails to casting directors going, hey, Happy New Year, I hope you'll bear me in mind, you forget to change their name at the start of
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, yeah. Dear you, Great Britain's
You're all called
grandmother.
Julia, or you're all called Charlotte, I'm so sorry.
Other obituaries that were also published in the CNN incident included...
The CNN incident.
Other famous people who were identified as Britain's favourite grandmother included Dick Cheney, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, Nelson Mandela.
At least Ronald Reagan looks like a grandmother.
Yes. Pope John Paul II, who was noted for his love of racing, and Fidel Castro, who was remembered as lifeguard, athlete and movie star.
So when they actually did the Queen Mother's obituary, did she come across as revolutionary
leading the
Catholic
Church?
Yeah, she accidentally shot someone in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Remembered for her 28-year incarceration on Robben Island.
There was a similar incident on November 16th, 2020, when clearly someone pressed send all at once, and the following people were all said to have died on the same day. Included Queen Elizabeth II, Pele, Clint Eastwood, Brigitte Bardot, Sophia Loren, Jimmy Carter, Ayatollah Al-Khamenei, Raul Castro and Lionel Jospin. Like,
that's an office running a sweepstake.
Yeah. That's someone trying to tip the Deadpool in their favour, isn't it?
That sounds like 2016.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it does. Well, it was 2020, so it was in the middle of the pandemic.
Who do you reckon has the worst lungs out of this lot, lads? Lionel Jospin sticks out like a bit of a sore thumb in that list, doesn't he?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, well, was he a president?
French, I think Prime Minister. I'm not even sure if he was president. Yeah,
but not even a big one.
Yeah.
Two more before my choice, I think. One of the two men in this story is someone called John Victor McNally, or Johnny Blood. And he was an American football player and coach. He was part of the NFL 1930s All-Decade team. So clearly, you know, impressive sportsman. His Wikipedia page has a subheading that is on point for this podcast. The heading is Legendary Antics.
That's what you want on a headstone.
Oh, God, yes, please. Oh, just a list of them.
Yeah, Wikipedia pages, when you open them up and it's like early life, career, retirement, and then, you know, references, you know, whatever. Mm. If a Wikipedia article has antics, I'm going to that.
Yeah. So apparently he jumped across a narrow ledge.
I kind of want to put that on Hitler's Wikipedia page.
I can't hear Legendary Antics without the Benny Hill theme tune in my head.
I don't, you just want to go for the word, Nero.
Legendary
Antics.
Yeah. After clinching the league championship with the Green Bay Packers, he got involved in a towel fight with a fellow NFL footballer on a train. During the towel fight...
In the next carriage over, there were two guys dueling with their butts. Yeah. It's a really weird train journey.
The towel fight apparently got out of hand. And so the man who he was towel dueling with, called Lavi Dilweg...
No, that's an anagram.
It is, yeah. He chased McNally through the car, trapped him at the rear end of the platform, at which point McNally hoisted himself on top of the car and they continued the towel fight on top of the moving train. He also, when he was under curfew before a match, he climbed down the face of a hotel to recite poetry to the swooning women below.
I thought you were going to say to the pigeons on the ledge.
But best of all, he got involved in a funny altercation with an ex-featherweight boxer called Augie Ratner. And Augie Ratner advertised his own funeral in a Minneapolis paper in 1971. And for reasons I don't fully understand, and McNally wrote back to him saying, "I'll be sad when you're really dead." At which point McNally then offered a bet on which of them would live the longest. And he wrote, "The one who goes first loses a grand to the one who survives. The loser won't miss the money and it will console the winner for the loss of a friend. May I live a long time and you live forever."
How, like a two-person tontine.
Yeah. And Ratner accepted the proposal, and both men had $1,000 bequest put in their wills. McNally survived 6 years after Ratner's death and won the bet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's absolutely great. But yeah, you know the way people are like, oh, the 60s, they were the times. The only people climbing down windows and having towel fights on top of trains. It's the 30s when everyone was on coke. That was when coke was de rigueur. That's
out of their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another famous person from history, Samuel Taylor Coleridge. 1816, he was in a hotel and he heard his death mentioned by a man reading out a newspaper report of a coroner's inquest. And he asked to see the paper and was told it was very extraordinary that Coleridge, the poet, should have hanged himself just after the success of one of his plays. But he was always a strange, mad fellow. And Coleridge turned to him and said, "Indeed, sir, it is a most extraordinary thing that he should have hanged himself, be the subject of an inquest, and yet that he should at this moment be speaking to you." At which point, Hercule Poirot turned
on the road to Emmaus.
Yeah, apparently what happened was that a man had been cut down from a tree in Hyde Park having hung himself, and the only identification was that his shirt was marked S.T. Coleridge. And Coleridge thought that the shirt must have been stolen from him or given to a charity shop. I don't know.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Or his names were Samuel Thomas or something. You know.
Yeah.
Could just have been that. Or he bought it at Coleridge's.
Or he was a fan.
Or he was a fan. Yes.
Yeah. But
so it was a tour t-shirt.
Yeah. Do rhyme in the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, do the other half of Kubla Khan. Yeah. But I think the one I'm going to go for is Shoichi Yokoi. Now, he is one of the famous Japanese soldiers who kept fighting after the end of World War II.
Great.
He was the one who was trapped in Guam, an American...
Which is very sticky.
Yeah. So... It was recaptured by American troops at the end of World War II, but he lived in a cave in the jungle until 1972, believing the war had ended, and that the leaflets that were dropped on the island reporting Japan's surrender were just enemy propaganda. And it was reported that he'd been killed in action, and an obituary was published, and on his return home, he was treated as a national hero for his tenacity and loyalty. His response is incredible, and this is I love this as sort of a self-made obituary. Because he simply said, "It is with much embarrassment that I have returned home alive."
Wow.
I love it. I love being embarrassed for your own ability to stay alive. I think it's wonderful.
Sorry, guys.
It's like the extreme version of that fencer who wouldn't leave the arena at London 2012. But they thought they should have had a point, just sat on the thing for like 35 minutes where I was like, "We do need to have more fencing."
Yeah.
I'm not leaving. I'm embarrassed to still be here.
Are you suggesting that these Japanese soldiers, him and Hiro Onoda, were basically having a a toddler tantrum about the end of World War II.
Yes, yeah.
War is over when I say it's over. Yeah.
Give me 34 years and I might have got over it.
Yeah.
Our nominations for the world's worst obituary are Barry's nomination of the racehorse that knocked out a python, Secretariat. Carrie's nomination for the world's worst mother, Dolores Aguilar, and we're glad that she's gone. And mine of the contrite Japanese soldier, Shoichi Yokoi. Very different. You know, one Japanese man, one New Mexican woman, and one American racehorse.
Who knocked out a python? That's I mean,
walk into a bar.
Yes.
The barman says, "Why the long face?" The Japanese man goes, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "No, I was talking to the horse."
Yeah. He's coming in here, giving it that.
Yeah, and then the woman does something unspeakable. So I think my Japanese soldier is not of the same caliber as your two.
Well, his was mainly he had a temperature obituary and then he was alive, was it?
Yeah, precisely. So it's between your two. And yours, I mean, yours is a well-written, unorthodox obituary, whereas yours is a well-written obituary, but for
a horse.
For a horse.
And also when he put it up against John Cleese's eulogy for Chapman at his funeral, which you haven't seen, I encourage people to watch.
Tremendous.
On YouTube, yeah.
I'm torn, because I like, do you know what? I like the honesty of yours, Carrie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's worst. It feels like Dolores Aguila was clearly one of the worst people.
So it was, yeah, so it was at least an appropriate obituary.
The honesty
it?
Of it.
So it's, but yeah, it's, but we're basically choosing between a horse and an arsehole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I fully expected coming here today.
Yeah. And I'm talking, because I love Graham Chapman. Should he be as well respected as the Usain Bolt of the horse racing world?
As humans, I would say yes.
Yeah.
But one of the sporting greats.
Yeah, one of the sporting greats.
And Secretariat. Yes. Yeah. One of the great pipe smokers of our time.
Yes.
And Graham Chapman.
And Graham Chapman.
Winning by 31 lengths and smoking a pipe when she goes over the line. That's why he actually died of lung cancer.
Yeah.
Very, very unusual in a racehorse. I am going to go for Bob Hope. Is the only answer.
How dare you?
Yeah.
I think it should be the Queen Mum. All of them.
All of them, yeah.
All of the Queen Mums.
All of the Queen Mums,
the many,
yeah.
Many, many leaders of America.
The many
Queen
copied
Mums.
And pasted Queen Mum obituaries. Yeah,
yeah, I think you're right. I think I picked the wrong one for my choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So the Queen's Mum obituary is the one that wins. We prematurely announced the winner. and we should have gone for that one. Before we go, it is time for the world's best news of the week. Oh my god, I forgot an obituary. I forgot an obituary that I have to tell you.
Oh. Okay.
I just found this just before the recording, and it's delightful. This was on CNN a couple of years ago, and just the little, you know, your phone does a little news headline update.
Yeah, a little alert.
Yeah, and the alert, the headline was, Peter Mayhew, the actor who portrayed Chewbacca in the Star Wars films, has died at age 74. Oh. I mean, or to say it phonetically, rarg, rararger.
To which Harrison Ford tweeted, "Rest easy, Chewie."
Yeah.
I know.
I know.
For our good news, we go to Tennessee. 15-year-old Sergio Peralta started the new school year at Hendersonville High School with a secret, and his secret was that one of his hands hadn't fully formed. And he said, "In the first day of school, I honestly felt like hiding my hand. I didn't want anyone to find out." A teacher in the school's engineering program did find out and told Peralta that his classmates might be able to help out. And what they did, they used online models and 3D printer, and they managed to make him a prosthetic right hand, which meant that he was able to catch a ball for the first time in his life.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? "They changed my life," Peralta said. "You should have a functioning healthcare system that did this," said me. But nevertheless, ignoring the fact that America's infrastructure is not up to scratch, that is, broadly speaking, a lovely story, I think.
Wow. The number of times you go to a kid, like, "Oh, did you have a good day at school? What did you do?" He said, "No, nothing." "Did you ever do a good day at school?" "Made a hand for my mate."
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they actually gave him a big hand.
They gave him a big hand.
Yeah. Oh.
Before we go, Carrie, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
On the Twitter sphere, but that's mainly me complaining about poor service from large corporations.
Most of Twitter that isn't fascism, yeah, is basically that.
Pretty much.
That and Drag Race spoilers.
You can find me on the podcast Ask the Nincompoops, which is like this, but for kids. More lies, less swearing.
Yeah. That's the selling point.
Is the tag.
That is a directed note I have had so many times. tremendous stuff. We are all off to show our parents the Dolores Aguilar obituary and waggle our eyebrows going, should we up the inheritance? Until next time, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.